My name is Tom Clendon, and I help students pass the SBR exam. And in this edition of my podcast, I'll be going through the answers to the 7 most frequently asked questions. Okay? So, first question I get asked a lot: do you get marks for quoting the IFRS name and number? And the short answer to that question is no. You don't need to rote learn the name and number of the standard. You simply need to be able to say the standard on impairment requires, the standard on provision sets out, whatever. And whilst I'm on the topic, you don't really need to quote word for word for word for word the exact definition of impairment, of provisions, of control in the exam. Because they're going to be tested not by a memory, they're going to be tested by an application. So you're going to be given a scenario, and you've got to be able, I think, to integrate your understanding of the definition with the scenario to produce an answer that explains and demonstrates your understanding, comes to the right conclusion, ideally. Question 2. How do you get professional marks? Now, in SBR, there are only 4 professional marks, 2 in question 2 and 2 in question 4. In other strategic professional exams, there are 20 professional marks. But in SBR, we've got 96 technical marks. So those 2 professional marks in the ethics question of question 2, they're going to be earned if you successfully link an ethical pillar directly to the case, directly to the scenario. Yeah, by pointing out that, you know, an error, this particular error has been made, and as a result, that is unethical because competence is a key ethical pillar, something like that. The other ethical mark, the other professional mark that can be earned in ethics revolves around action, giving advice, appropriate advice to the relevant person as to what they should do in this ethical dilemma situation. And normally that's involved talking it through. Normally that involves getting professional advice. Normally that involves considering resignation as an ultimate last resort. Question 4, professional marks will be gained if the answer is polished, if the answer is reflective, if the answer is complete, is considered, is well structured. Looks like something that you could give to your boss. Looks like something that you could give to a client. Professional marks. Yeah, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Because if you give a good answer, it's much more likely to be eligible for those extra professional marks. If your answer is incomplete, scrappy, technically wrong, you're not going to be picking up professional marks. Question 3. Are there negative marks? Can you get marks taken away from you? No. There's no negative marking. If you're writing about sustainability reporting and you're putting forward 3 points and one of them is just rubbish, wrong, you're still going to earn 2 marks for the first 2 valid points. You're not going to have a mark taken away for doing something silly or something technically incorrect. There is no negative marking. There's maximum marks. If it's for 4 marks and you say 5 brilliant things, you're still only going to get 4 marks. So make sure that you do move on. 4th question. What's the own figure rule? What's method marking, in other words? Well, this is pointing out that you can get marks for doing the right thing to the wrong number. So if you're asked to calculate goodwill for 3 marks and you're having to determine the investment, the NCI and the net assets, if you get the NCI wrong, goodwill clearly is going to be wrong. But you would still gain the marks for dealing with the investment, for dealing with the net assets. And if you then had to go on and do an impairment review on that goodwill, providing you did the right thing to the wrong number, providing you put that goodwill correctly in a cash generating unit, you could get all of the marks available for doing the impairment review, even though numerically the impairment loss would naturally be wrong if actually the goodwill figure itself that you put in was wrong. So it's very important that the marker can follow through your method. Method marking. They're not so, if the answer's perfect, it's easy to mark. But where the numbers are wrong, you can still pick up marks if you're leaving an audit trail, because there is an own figure rule that is method marking. Question 5. What's the biggest reason why students fail? Well, there's lots of reasons why students fail. Some of them just haven't put the work in. Some of them don't answer the question. But I think on reflection, the biggest reason that students can fail this exam is they're not being marked out of 100. There's not enough there in the exam. And question 4 drops off. You know, students can do well in question 1 and 2 and have a good attempt at question 3. But if there's nothing written for question 4, if you're only being marked out of 75, if you're only being marked out of 70, you haven't got a hope of passing this exam. Time management is absolutely crucial. I mean, ideally, you're doing mock exams to time, and ideally, your tutor is marking those scripts. So you do understand your weaknesses and you can work on them. It's not then a surprise in the exam that it's challenging and it's time pressured, and you've developed in the meantime strategies to cope with that because your tutor has been supporting you and helping you. Nobody walks out of the exam with 100. Nobody does. Everybody is imperfect. Everybody is making mistakes. But the main reason why students fail the exam is they simply don't judge the time correctly. Time management is absolutely key. All right. Question 6. How do you account for derivatives? Oh, my God, I've only got a minute. And there's a whole separate podcast on this. Basically, derivatives are at fair value. Basically, they're at fair value. That's how you account for them. You know, they're entered into at little or no cost, but they're very volatile in value. They change up and down very, very quickly because their value is derived from this underlying item. So, yeah, at fair value, the default is that they are for gambling, for trading, and therefore the default is fair value through P&L. If you're hedging, if you're using the derivative to cover a risk, then if it's a fair value hedge, so you've got the risk as a gain or a loss appearing in the accounts, then you match the derivative. The derivative is matched, probably in the P&L. But if it's a cash flow hedge, because the gain or loss isn't being captured that you're looking to cover, then for the derivative, you park it in equity to the extent it's effective. So you take it directly to equity and it can subsequently be recycled. All right. As I say, there's a whole further episode on accounting for derivatives. And the last question that I'm asked a lot is, Tom, what's your favourite food? And I have 2 answers to that question. I love chocolate and I love cheese. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Tom Clendon. I help students pass SBR. Please, if you want help, reach out to me through social media, through WhatsApp, 07725 350793. Find me on LinkedIn, Find me on YouTube. Good luck. Take it easy. Thank you for listening. Like and subscribe, please.